Good afternoon. We're going to get the Los Osos Groundwater Basin Management Committee meeting started Wednesday, June 21st, 2023. Laura, do we have the recording started? Okay. Call the
yes,
meeting.
Yes, we do.
Thank you. We'll call the meeting to order. Move to agenda item 2, roll call.
Yeah, Director Gibson.
Here.
Director Cesena.
I'm here.
Chair Zimmer.
Here.
All right.
Director, just a reminder, if you could please unmute your microphones when you talk into them, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
So we have three of the four parties represented. We do not have a representative from S&T Mutual. They informed me before the meeting that they were going to be unable to have their director or alternate director attend this meeting. But enough for a quorum.
All right, thank you. We'll move to item 3, Pledge Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll move to item 4, board member comments.
I have nothing.
I don't have anything either.
And I don't have anything either. Okay, item 5, special presentation. We have none. Moving to item 6, the consent agenda. Consent agenda includes the 2023 budget update and invoice registry, and item B, approval of the minutes from May 17, 2023 BMC meeting. Do we have any discussion or a motion?
Public comment.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. We'll have to go to public comment, right? Okay. We'll go to public comment on the consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you are online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium.
There's no public comment online. Thank you.
I'll move approval of consent.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to item 7, the comments not appearing on the agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. All right, Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards. And sometimes we hear comments, typically from the public, that tend to oversimplify the groundwater basin formation. And I'd like to, in a couple minutes, underscore the complexity of our groundwater basin. We know it's not one big bathtub. Most attention is given to the horizontal strata that we refer to as zones A, B, C, D, and E. And what I'd like to do is cover something that's not discussed so often and mention the vertical strata that cut the groundwater basin, in our case, in a north-south direction. The first example of this is strand B of the Los Osos Fault, which, if you can visualize, it roughly parallels Palisades and extends kind of from the Irish Hills directly towards Morro Rock. So that's one of the vertical cuts. And then the largest is obviously the Los Osos Creek and the creek compartment. And that's also a north-south cut. So we have both horizontal slices and these vertical cuts in the basin that really make it a complex structure, clearly not one big bathtub. And so the main point here is that when the basin plan does call for the east side wells, it makes sense because we do have these cutoffs by way of Strand B and Los Osos Creek. So, I think that's important in looking at the complexity. Thank you.
There's no further public comment online.
Okay, we do have public comment.
Before we start the clock, if I go over a couple seconds, would that be okay? Because I have to hold up my computer to show you a picture, and that might take a second of okay. my time. Would that be okay?
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. Okay.
I'm not gonna like.
Okay, go ahead and state your name.
My name is Becky McFarland. I'm happy to be here, and thank you all for serving on this board. You know, Los Osos is a funny town, and there's usually something to chuckle about here. Lately, the funny thing is those darned bedrooms that are popping up around town, like this one on Highland Drive. I don't know if, can you see it? That's considered a bedroom by our county. This bedroom, it has an oversized garage. It has a living room, a bathroom, a kitchenette, a second story deck, and another deck on the roof. Usually a second lot is not needed for a bedroom. Here's another one that's popping up. This one's on Santa Isabel. That's considered a bedroom too. It also has a garage. I don't know the whole floor plan, but it's not a bedroom. There's also one on Mitchell Drive that is popping up. And I say popping up because all three of these are being either rapidly built now or were very rapidly built before. It's funny, I didn't get the memo that one of my bedrooms, that my bedrooms should each have their own garage, living room, kitchenette, and should be next door. But honestly, this isn't funny. These buildings, these guest houses, I've been told numerous times by the county, are considered the same as a bedroom. Does anyone here honestly believe that these are really bedrooms, that they are in the spirit of not adding any water-using building to our critically overdrafted basin? The Coastal Commission made it abundantly clear in their letter to Trevor Keith last spring that the county should not even consider or accept applications for development in Los Osos that cannot show evidence of an adequate water supply. Last fall's Regional Water Quality Control Board staff report states that none of the water metrics will be reach sustainability till 2050. As I said at the last BMC meeting, the county is willfully and knowingly undermining the Coastal Commission and the Basin Management Committee by sneakily issuing only ministerial permits for these guest houses. Voila, no CDP, so not appealable to the Coastal Commission. I say it's an appalling display of dishonesty and deceit. And if you don't believe me, that this is what's going on. The Highland Guest House, the owner who works for the Water Board, asked the county, and we have evidence of it, how to get around the Coastal Commission. And the County Planning Department coached him on how to get around it. I've not even mentioned larger homes being built outside the prohibition zone on the same aquifer. Yes, there's Title 19 that's being looked at and modified. Funny thing, the county continues to use it during the review. So purveyors, please stand up for our water supply and stand against this county nonsense. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll bring it back to the board. Have any further discussion on that? Okay. Okay, we'll go ahead and close public comment. Move to item 8, Executive Director's Report.
Yeah, thanks, Chair Zimmer. We have happy to provide this month's Executive Director's Report. still looking for ways to streamline and these opportunities, that these meetings. And so let me just hit a couple of items that we're not going to hit later in the agenda, just to save some time, or that, you know, weren't already covered at a previous meeting. So I guess I would say, with respect to the Lower Aquifer Nitrate investigation, we're still working with Regional Board and BMC party staff to define the scope of that investigation and the cost for that, and then bring that back to the BMC to a future meeting. And then really, yeah, I think everything else we are going to cover as an action item on the agenda that was updated within the Executive Director's report. So I think I'll end it there, but happy to answer any questions that the board or the public may have.
I any question from the board members? No. Just one follow-up from our last meeting, the stream gauge rating curve project. Any development on that?
Yeah. I am. I spoke with the Clew Terrace geologist a couple of weeks ago, and actually happy to report that Los Osos Creek is still flowing. So that is actually, they're continuing to capture measurements at sort of the tail end as the flows start to drop, so we can get more accurate low flow estimates in Los Osos Creek. So consequently, we've kind of put, it's taken a little longer for that rating curve to come out, but I think it, for good reason, that we're still seeing flow and subsequent recharge to the basin.
Okay, good. Thank you. We'll go ahead and open this up to public comment on item 8, the Executive Director's Report.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, come up to the podium. Jeff, you just have to unmute yourself.
Thank you again. Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Edwards, and I had just a couple items on the ED report. One of them, speaking of Los Osos Creek, I recently sent over a conceptual drawing and a cost estimate for an inflatable dam that theoretically could be installed on the north side of the bridge at Los Osos Creek there at LOVR. And so this was prepared by a firm in the United Kingdom, a Dryhoff is their name, and they have international experience with inflatable dams. And again, this is a low tech, low cost, really. I forget exactly what the number is, but it's like, you know, chicken feed in the water world. And so I think I'd ask that the ED put that on the list of items to review and possibly explore further, particularly as it relates to permitting, what that would look like. And again, by way of review, this inflatable dam would be deployed very infrequently at super high flows. I mean, when we have 13 atmospheric rivers, there's a time there to raise the dam and allow water to back up in the creek and enhance the recharge capacity. So it wouldn't be used that often, but when we did get these back-to-back storms and real high flows in the creek, I think there's a real role for that. The water's there, the basin is daylighted there. So I'd like to explore that. Secondly, we had a discussion before about a GIS data base for all the extraction wells in the community. And I understand there are some legal implications or ramifications surrounding personal information. But most of the data that I'm familiar with and have is from the health department for over 300 wells in Los Osos, and that's all public information. So I think we can pursue the completion of this GIS study that Cleith Harris Group started with some, you know, some provisions in there, remove sensitive information or something, but let's complete that project. We need to know where the straws are, and I think we can do that and still maintain the integrity of personal information. Thank you.
There's no further public comment online.
Okay, thank you. We do have public comment in the boardroom.
Good afternoon, Becky McFarland again. I'm hoping that this, did I just turn something off? It just got quieter.
Yeah.
Hello.
Testing.
Hello. Oh,
yep.
I can talk really loud.
It sounds great online.
Sounds okay?
Know.
Okay.
I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you. I just had a couple of comments. I agree with Jeff, we need to be doing something to help conserve rainwater when we get it. Also, we need to know what wells are drawing water and which ones are retired. I mentioned before I took this hydrology and groundwater sustainability class through UC Davis, and they spent a long time going through the maps and showing what other areas are doing to manage their water. And it's pretty amazing. One of the best parts of the class was the question and answer period at the end, where we had a Department of Water Resources director person there and others giving us, they actually spent about 15 minutes on the Los Osos Aquifer and looking at the maps and going through that. I do have that in recording if you're interested in seeing it, because it was really interesting. But yeah, we should know what's being drawn out of the aquifer. Also in the report, I believe this is where it is, Dan, and you could correct me if it's not, where it says water conservation update, and it has a blue heading, because I just took a screenshot of it. But it we've talked about this before, questioned this before, that the estimated use for people is 38 gallons per person per day and remains that number currently. And I know Ron had reported before CSD water use was much more than that. And I don't know what Golden State Water's use is. So I question that number of 38 gallons per person per day. Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further comment in the boardroom. We'll bring it back to the board. Dan, do you want to?
Yeah, I can provide some information with respect to some of those questions. I've seen the rubber dam information that Mr. Edwards provided, and I'm aware that is an effective strategy utilized by a number of water purveyors here in California, and I'm sure elsewhere in the nation and the world. A couple of examples. I actually started my career at Alameda County Water District, and they have a series of rubber dams in Alameda Creek where they inflate and divert water to some recharge ponds or old quarries. And it's an effective strategy for them for improving their groundwater recharge. I also had the opportunity to, went over my time. Tour United Water Conservation Districts down in Ventura. They have, it's not a rubber dam facility, but it is a diversion facility in the Santa Clara River, where they can divert flows. And they're actually looking to divert and recharge 100,000 acre feet this year from that facility. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, they have a much larger river as well as geology that really supports the rapid infiltration of that water into the groundwater basins down there in Ventura County. But just to say all that, yeah, those are effective strategies. They are in use up and down the state. But permitting of those types of projects is very challenging. And I know both of those organizations are dealing with primarily the fish passage requirements associated with those types of facilities. They typically require pretty expensive, extensive facilities, both to allow mature fish to travel upstream, but also to allow juvenile fish to travel downstream during certain periods of the year. Mm-hmm. I'll just keep going and then answer any additional questions. The GIS well database is being updated to be able to redact that sensitive confidential information. And so that once we've completed that, that will greatly increase the flexibility to make that data available to the BMC parties and or the public to be determined. And the other question was around, well, I'd be very interested to see the DWR discussion on the Los Osos Basin, but the estimated water use, I think the difference might be that the estimated water use in the executive director's report is indoor water only, and it's basically an estimate of how much sewer water or, you know, wastewater the community produces measured at the Los Osos Water Recycling Facility divided by the population of the sewer collection system or the sewer area of the community. And I think probably the other estimates that are being referenced are likely total water use or total per capita per demand water usage, which would include indoor and outdoor by purveyor customers.
I have a couple comments. I think it might be worth looking at the 38 against this year's water use from the purveyors, January, December. Those seem like they might be as close as we're ever going to get to estimates for true indoor only water use, because I don't know how you do it without a meter heading for the treatment plant. But yeah, let's just see where that goes. And I'm glad that database is going to be finished up. That's a good thing.
Could I speak to that, Mr. Sasania? So you call the methodology for assessing the sewer charges is measuring water use at the meter during wet months. And I can't remember, I think it's two, it might be January, February, or maybe January, December through, I think it's just a couple of months.
Right.
And it's assumed that all outdoor irrigation has stopped. So that's where the calculation of indoor water use comes from.
I just think that this year, we're pretty certain that outdoor irrigation stopped. Whereas a lot of years,
you certainly hope so.
January and February can be pretty dry.
They could be added.
And you can be using water then.
Yeah.
I just think that since we had such a wet year, if we're going to use that methodology, this year is the year.
So we use it every
year. We use it every year.
Okay. So, and it changes every year.
I haven't looked at a history of it, but okay. We just acted on the sewer charges. We set hearing for the sewer charges, or did we act on it today, yesterday? So okay. We can find out.
Okay.
So yeah, I know just from Golden State's reporting that we turn in the numbers every year. I don't know, and I would think that the charges would have to be accurately reflected. So, but to your point, I think that's a good point that, you know, this year we're,
if there's any year,
this is the year to really look at that. And then if we don't look at it by the next report, Dan, maybe you could just add the indoor clarification on that comment. That's a good point.
And I think it does say indoor.
Oh, does it say indoor? Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay. We're going to close item 8. The executive director's report, move into item 9, our action items. We have about 5 of them on the list. We'll start with action item 9A. Presentation of the final draft of the annual monitoring report.
Yeah, so thank you, Chair Zimmer. Yeah, pleased to present the final draft 2022 annual monitoring report. Presents probably a strong term. I think we had a very lengthy presentation on the components of the annual monitoring report at our last meeting. So really just here to answer questions. I want to highlight, you know, one change that was made in the annual report based on a review. And then there were a couple of comments submitted by S&T Mutual Water Company that we've included at the back end of the report or in the agenda packet that I think were good comments, and based on discussions with BMC party staff will be something that we'll look to try to incorporate into the next year's annual monitoring report. Didn't really have the time to do, you know, some of those more significant changes this year, given that there's a court deadline to submit the report by the end of this month, but they were good comments and we'll look to incorporate them. in next year's annual report. I did include in the PowerPoint presentation the one change that I did want to highlight. So this is the plan view figure for trying to depict seawater intrusion in the lower aquifer zones D and E. And I just wanted to highlight that in the upper portion of the basin, the red line was in the draft annual report was inadvertently shown to the west of LA 11, whereas it should have been to the east, as it represents the 250 milligram per liter chloride isopleth, and the value at LA 11 is 279. So we made that change. I don't know if you can see. So basically, this red line is now shown on the east of this well, whereas in the draft report, it had been shown slightly to the west. So just a more accurate representation based on the value observed in 2022. But other than that, no other significant changes were made to the final report from the draft report, but I'm open to answer any questions board or the public may have.
So I have a question on that. Did that data point move compared to last year then? Was the original depiction last year and it just wasn't updated to this year? Is that what happened?
My understanding is it just was it just wasn't moved in the draft report.
Okay. All right. Any other comments or questions? We'll go ahead and move to public comment on item 9A.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
We have one public comment in the room.
Becky McFarland again. Good thing I'm here, or you guys might get bored. I have a question, and I know you can't answer it directly right now, but these red lines that show this data from various years, and then there's the black line that is supposed to be the 2022 seawater intrusion line. Which line is used for reporting seawater intrusion? Because that's a mile apart. I've actually clocked it in my car to see from the 2005 number to this red line. So I'm wondering which one, because the seawater numbers haven't changed that much, but on here the lines show. So I'm not clear on that. And then also some of the pages, like page 4 and 5, there's tables, but the last column, which explains things, half of the words are gone. I mean, it's cut off. So I don't know if, and that was in the draft report, and it's in the beginning in the summary. And it would be nice to be able to see that. So that's the end of my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, so I can provide an explanation on the different lines on this figure. And I will admit it is sometimes a little tricky to try to visualize this in plan view. Because we really have two different sets of lines representing the seawater intrusion front. We have, I guess let's just characterize all the lines except the red lines on kind of the left-hand side of the figure. Those represent the movement of the seawater intrusion front, or our representation of it as the 250 milligram per liter chloride isopleth in zone D from 2005 to current. The fall of 2020. And so that's zone D of the lower aquifer. But additionally, we are also showing not necessarily the movement, we are showing the movement based on the data that we have. As we just talked about, we moved that red line based on that one data point of the seawater intrusion front in zone E of the lower aquifer. And I think I have it for the pocket slide from our last presentation. You can really better visualize that. No, I don't have it. I don't think. In the annual report, there's the cross-section diagram that shows both, you know, the cross-section of the basin, but it also shows the extent of seawater, estimates of seawater intrusions in zones D and zone E. And so hopefully that helps explain what those different lines represent. There's that one, and then there's the other cross-section. Yeah. And then, you know, so these are both visualizations. But then we also have, you know, the chloride metric, where we take data from specific wells. And so that's, you know, it's a sort of a combination of all of these things for how we try to track and display our understanding of the extent of seawater intrusion in the Los Osos Basin. And then I think
if I might, Mr. Chairman, on that matter, I think it's really important to emphasize that this is visualization. If you look at, I'm looking at that figure, which was, you did correct in the final draft. So figure 18, the data that's actually there comes from the wells that you see spotted there. These lines are estimates. There's mathematical process to interpolate what the value is. I think the other thing to understand is that these lines give a sense that there's seawater here and freshwater here. They tend to look like there's a particular front. This is just the location of a particular concentration of chloride, which is representative of that. But the actual physical situation in terms of how much salt is in the water in any one place is not a discrete thing like this. And it's water dilutes and diffuses, the salt diffuses in. But this is just a simplification, an attempt to take a series of data that are spatial in three dimensions and show it in a simple way, reference to a time standard. So I urge folks not to read too much into this. It is really more important to understand what the chloride concentration is actually in the production wells and how it affects our ability to extract water. This is just a way of trying to, guess is not the right word, but to estimate what's going on in a wider spatial scale.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about that sort of a term I use, preferential pathways for seawater intrusion, in a future agenda item here. Oh, and then, I suspect potentially the issues with page 4 and 5, they're landscape orientation pages. And so in the PDF, they show up as all being there. I don't know, was this in a printed version?
It's just, you go to the county website and click on it.
I think maybe if you download a copy of it, that should hopefully address the issue. At least in the version I have here, it has the full.
Okay. We're looking for a motion next, right?
Yep. This is a formal action item.
I'll move staff's recommendation to approve the annual report.
I'll second that.
Okay, let's do a roll call for this one. Director Gibson?
Yes.
Director Cesena?
Yes.
Chair Zimmer?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 3-0.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll move to action item 9B, draft 2023 spring lower aquifer groundwater basin monitoring results.
Yeah, so it's a little odd, but it just seems to be how the timing works out every year as we present and adopt the annual report for the previous year, and then subsequently, either at the same meeting or shortly thereafter, have results from the current year. So what we have today available for the BMC is the draft. You know, we'll characterize them as draft because nothing gets final until it gets in the annual report. But results from the spring 2023 groundwater monitoring program and updates to the chloride and water level metrics from that data. So we're showing this graph here that I knew most of you, if you've been following the BMC for any amount of time, should be very familiar with. We have the chloride metric visualized in the red lines. The solid line represents observed data values. The dashed lines represent predicted values as of the time of the development of the basin plan. And then in blue, we show the water level metric. Both, just as a reminder, the water level and the chloride metrics are an aggregation of water level and or chloride data from select wells in the basin that are combined together to give us kind of an assessment of basin conditions in one value. And that there's advantages to that, and that we can look at it and kind of easily depict trends in those metrics, but disadvantages in that it, you know, doesn't necessarily represent the specific trends that are occurring within each individual well within the basin. But all that being said, you know, some very good news to show here for 2023. We saw an increase in the water level metric of 1.8 feet from 2.5 feet to 4.3 feet. That's the single largest increase in the water level metric that we've observed over the period of record. And, you know, one of the other things that, you know, Spencer Harris pointed out to me is that if you look at the water level metric that we observed in 2023, it is actually higher or at least equivalent to the water level metric that, you know, data we have from the mid-1970s. So that's, you know, in a sense, it's an amazing story of recovery to be able to come from negative 4 feet below sea level in the early 90s to recover back to levels seen in the mid-70s. You know, there's still work to do. Our target is 8 feet because even back in the mid-70s, the basin had been impacted by pumping and levels had dropped from, you know, even periods of time before that. But I think at the same time, still a very, very exciting news. I think it, you know, we can attribute that to the rainfall, the reduced pumping, as we talked about earlier, due to the lack of need to irrigate with all the atmospheric rivers and other rainfall that we received, the increased recharge from Los Osos Creek, as well as the increased recharge just throughout the community as that rainwater percolates down into the groundwater basin. So good news on the water level metric. On the chloride metric, unfortunately, we did see a slight increase in the chloride metric values. That increase is primarily associated with the chloride values in LA-11 or the monitoring well up on the Pasadena Avenue, that same actual well that we were looking at in the previous figure. We saw an increase in chloride concentrations in that well. Interestingly enough, though, we also saw an increase in the water level at that well. So the water level's coming up, the chlorides are still coming up. Cleitheris geologists, their theories that, you know, we may see both of those continue to come up for a period of time until we reach some threshold with the water levels, that then we'll start to see that stabilize and or start to retreat once sufficient hydrostatic pressures are achieved. So, you know, that just to kind of help people understand where that, how that is all occurring with the chloride metric. Again, this is the figure 18 from the annual monitoring report. Just want to add some of the 2023 data. Let's come back to that one. But like I said, yeah, we saw an increase here at LA-11 in chlorides. But we also saw a decrease here in LA-10. And so, you know, in the metric, those tend to, you know, offset each other to a certain degree. And then the other thing that I wanted to point out with respect to the spring Little Rock River monitoring data is this blue box here. Is so now we have the first measurement from the modified LA-13 or the Faro monitoring well that the BMC funded back in December of 2022. We have the first data point from that new, quote unquote, new well. That is a representative lower aquifer zone E well and has a very, a very low chloride concentration of 77 milligrams per liter. And so, it's important to point out that, A, that's good news that, that we're not seeing intrusion into that portion of zone E in that area. But B, it also just kind of just points to the preferential pathways of seawater intrusion. And we can see that here on this figure, even in some of the historic data. So back in 2012, we saw seawater intrusion occurring and impacting the Palisades well here, the CSD's Palisades well, with chloride concentrations almost approaching 2,000 milligrams per liter. My understanding that at some point the CSD modified that well to no longer pump from zone E, and so now it's only pumping from zone D. So that's relieved the pressure on zone E in that area. But, interestingly enough, so we saw those elevated chlorides here, but we didn't see it at the monitoring well at the end of Palisades. Literally not that far away. We've seen and continued to see relatively low chlorides based on the geophysics that we do there. We also didn't see chlorides reaching LA-18, and I can't really, but you can see that at the right-hand side of the map with chloride values of 33 milligrams per liter. And then now with our new Faro well, just slightly to the north, we're seeing low chloride levels in zone E also. So highlighting that you can see some of these preferential pathways that are impacting a well, likely induced by the pumping that was occurring in that well in zone E. But, I think to the other point, it's not a continuous front as we don't see it in other areas. And so that's good. We'll continue to monitor those other wells and hope to never see that increasing chloride in those locations. So that's just an update on the spring monitoring data and interpretations.
I think a good point there is that we've already got that Faro well data available. And so every little data point that we have that comes on helps us understand what's going on. And that's a critical piece right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just adding on to that, Chuck, I agree. And when we look at the usual graphic of chloride metric and water level metric, it is the trend that makes a difference relative to the projections. And so I guess it's striking to have been at this long enough to have seen the trend develop. It's happening. Mm-hmm. And I think we gain deeper understanding as we're able to track that trend, which are all positive. So even as the chloride metric goes up a little bit, I think we can get the sense now that there is variability in there. And as long as it's tracking within that envelope, soon to be an envelope, I would hope revised by the use of the transient model so that we have a little more confidence or a little more sophistication in our calculation of that envelope. This is all good stuff.
It is. And we need to remember not to give up the gains,
right?
Not to get lazy about our conservation and assume that this trend will continue.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think it just, reiterates that what we're doing is working. It's not happening as fast as we would, it's not these big, huge steps like we want to see, but, just that confirmation that this effort is well worth it. And we got to stay on track, like you mentioned.
Yep.
Okay.
And I would add, I think last year our last meeting we talked about whack-a-mole, but we're implementing strategies to mitigate against the seawater intrusion and these changes that we're seeing. So I think we've seen really good success. We the modifications to the Palisades well, the ability to lower the chloride concentrations in the sort of central portion of the basin, the syncline area, as Spencer likes to call it. And I'm sure that's the appropriate technical term for it. you know, and then, but now we're seeing potentially increasing concentration in other portions of the basin, but there's strategies being implemented there as well. The CSD recently completed its upper 8th Street aquifer well that allow us to shift pumping from lower to upper, the lower aquifer to the upper aquifer in that portion of the basin. The CSD is continuing to pursue its second program C well, and that'll provide additional flexibility to shift pumping within the basin. So it's those types of strategies. It's letting the Broaddrson Mound continue to build, continued water conservation, all that are going to hopefully allow us to be successful.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, I think as we see, in the technical world, we might call them outlying data points, specific areas where readings, observations are at some greater remove from the overall trend that we think we're monitoring. I think it's worthwhile under our sense of adaptive management to ask our technical experts to have a look and see if they can analyze why those might be. You know, I think I know Dan and I talked about the possibility of a technical memo that would address why we're seeing elevated chlorides in a certain well, and what might we expect. Again, we may or may not have the tools with the current modeling technique, the current estimation technique, but I think that's just the kind of thing that adaptive management requires us to do, to continue to extend our understanding of the dynamics of this complex physical system. So I don't know when that, you know, when the thought might come, but I would imagine it a bit later in the year, Mr. Heimel, that we would consider whether we want to direct some investigation toward specific results that are worthy of investigation, shall we say.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've kind of had seen that, you know, after we get through the annual report preparation, the spring monitoring, it's a good time of year for the BMC staff and the party representatives to try to take on specific initiatives. I think we did that in 2021 with the updated estimate for sustainable yield. You know, we're doing that in other areas as well. So yeah, I think if there's interest in a deeper dive on LA-11 and the seawater that we're seeing and other potential mitigating strategies, that would be a good thing to try to do the second half of this year.
We're going to move to public comment on action item B.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. All right, Lynette, you just have to unmute yourself.
Hi, Lynette Tornotsky. I was just wondering if you could clarify for lay people like myself, what does spring mean? Because spring actually ended yesterday. Thank you.
There's no further online public comment.
Okay. Bring it back to the board.
Yeah, in-house.
Or I'm sorry, yeah. In-house.
Just a couple of comments. It's exciting to see the water level now only at 4 feet away from minimum sustainability for our existing population. It should be pointed out that the aquifer was deemed to be an overdraft in the 1970s. So we are back at those levels, but it was in overdraft at that time. I'd also like to know, when will we stop using production wells for monitoring and only have monitoring wells? Because they really, from what I've learned, you're not supposed to do that and double weighting the data from one of them. Back to the class I took, it was so impressive to see what Santa Clara Valley Water has done. I mean, it's been a long time that they've been working on this, and ag really pushed for it because they were having seawater intrusion and subsidence. And what they've done is amazing. And I would love to see some kind of plans, or, I mean, we've talked about rubber dams or things like that, or basins or something. It seems like there could be some things that we could do here, whether it's as small as capturing rainwater off of roofs, but a lot of water comes down the hill, especially at my house and down the street. So I would love to see more of that type of conservation effort be made in this town. And I think we could do it. I think we get a lot of people that would like to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll bring it back to the board.
Yeah, good question. Spring. What does spring mean? In the context of the BMC Lower Aquifer Monitoring Program, spring means April. That's when the majority of the monitoring wells are sampled, water quality and water level data is collected. And so, yeah, consistently when we're saying spring, we're referring to April. And then fall, that typically refers to October in terms of the timing. Yeah, I mean, I think the comment about aquifer and overdraft in the 70s is an important one. Yeah, that I think that I don't know the exact timing of those definitions, but it's a little bit about the level, but it's a lot about the trend. You know, is our water levels declining or our water levels increasing? I mean, I think you could say that water levels were roughly equivalent based on the metric, but the trends are completely different. So important to take that into account. Stop using production wells for monitoring wells. Excellent point. Yes, we want to do that. We're working actively to do that. I didn't talk about it. We'll talk about it a little bit more later, but we're making good progress on getting the Skyline monitoring well drilled this year. And so with that monitoring well, we will have the option, the BMC will have the option to consider replacing the Rosina well in the chloride metric with a Skyline monitoring well that is roughly located in the same area. Again, that sort of the synclinal access, the central portion of the basin where we historically saw the greatest extent of seawater intrusion, with a well that is purely a monitoring well. It's not a production well. Hopefully it would not influence by borehole leakage and provide better, more representative data. So yeah.
If I might, Mr. Chairman. I think for the public, it's important to understand how to interpret the water level metric here. The attainment, if the water, the attainment of a particular level, for instance, 8 feet above sea level, is not the indication of sustainability. That level was set as a management objective by the basin management plan, so that the group managing the basin, namely us, can feel comfortable in the physical state of the basin. As Mr. Heimel said, it's all about the trends here. And so the important message in the curve that is the blue line is that from 1970 to about 1990, water levels were dropping. That is consistent with overdraft in the basin. From about 2010 or 15 or 17, when conservation efforts really took force, we see the trend increasing, which is consistent with the fact that production from this basin is less than the sustainable yield of this basin. And so I think that we really need to, again, emphasize when we talk about these things, what are the appropriate conclusions to draw from this? So this trend, this additional trend, which is wonderful in a particularly wet year to see it go up as rapidly as it has anywhere along this curve, is confirmation that our estimates and calculations of production and safe yield are consistent with managing this basin at less than its sustainable yield. So I think we'll just keep working on that. Keep working on that message.
Okay, thank you. Do we need a motion on this? The file and receive, just file and receive it? Okay. All right, sounds good. Thank you. Move to action item 9C, the WRFP study peer review consultant selection recommendation.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Zimmer. So a couple of items here related to consultant election recommendations. First one here is a recommendation from the BMC Consultant Selection Committee to select GSI Water Solutions to provide peer review consulting services for the Water Recycling Funding Program study. As you'll recall, at our last meeting, we approved Cleetaris geologists to complete that study. But as has been envisioned all along, was that the BMC would additionally hire a third party hydrogeologist, specialty firm to participate and provide participate in the technical advisory committee that will participate in the overall development of the wharf study and the development of the transient model. And then also to provide peer review of all the major deliverables. And so the BMC staff and BMC party representatives solicited proposals, received four proposals, reviewed those proposals, and is recommending the selection of GSI Water Solutions based on their proposed approach and their knowledge of groundwater modeling. And so we've got a copy of their proposal included in the agenda packet, and we also included budget in this year and then vision, including budget in next year's BMC budget to fund their services.
Quick, have we started working on that 2024? We're pretty confident we'll have that 15,000 for that work.
I will have to admit I haven't started working on the 2024 budget, but I am pretty confident that we will have that. One of the things that's made our budget tighter this year has been, the 85,000 that we included for construction of a new monitoring well. And so, unless we have a similar initiative next year, I think we should have plenty of budget available within the historical budgets that we've had for the BMC for the 15,000.
Comments? We'll go ahead and open this 9C up to public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the boardroom. No public comment in the boardroom.
With that, I'll go ahead and recommend that we approve the selection of GSI Water Solutions to provide peer review, the consulting services for the WRFP study.
Second.
Let's just do a roll call vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Yep. Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. We'll move to action item 9D, the Skyline Monitoring Well Design and Construction Management Consultant Recommendations.
Yeah, so similar to the last item, again, this is a consultant recommendation. We needed the services of hydrogeologists to help us prepare the design and oversee the construction of the Skyline monitoring well that we referenced earlier. We solicited proposals, received four proposals, representative from each of the BMC parties reviewed those proposals and is providing a recommendation that Cleese Harris geologists be selected to provide those services for the Skyline monitoring well. Included is their proposal to do that work with an estimated cost of approximately $30,000, and the BMC currently has a budget of $155,000 total for the Skyline monitoring well project.
Okay. There's no questions.
Yeah, if we will, I was going to ask if this was a not to exceed contract. We're going to end up in this is selection of the consultant. I mean, they estimate that it's going to cost $30,000. Do we sign a work order or contract that it's a not to exceed $30,000? Is that
so? We have a contract, and we can have a separate contract. It would be a not to exceed without approval by the Basin Management right. Committee.
Yeah.
That, all of our, yeah. our budgets and those items are set up in that manner.
The standard is not to not to exceed. As work items are added, they are not to exceed this estimated amount unless authorized.
Correct. Perfect. Yeah. So if there was additional work that was required, then we would bring that to the BMC for approval before approving or paying that additional work.
I have additional questions regarding that, but maybe let's go to public comment first, and then we'll bring that back for a little deeper discussion. We'll go to public comment on action item D.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand or come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
There's no public comment in the boardroom either. We'll bring it back to the board for further discussion. Chuck, do you have any comments before?
No, I see we're getting two L's out of this. I assume a D and an E probably. Okay. Right underneath Skyline.
Correct.
This past year. No, we need to move ahead with this. And so since we don't have any comments to really worry about, I think the report's pretty clear. And so I will move that we approve the selection of Cleith Harris Geologists to provide monitoring well design and construction management consulting services for the Skyline monitoring wells.
I'll second that for discussion.
Okay. Yeah. So along with that estimated not to exceed amount, I mean, what about if some of the work doesn't get performed either? So it's just difficult to have this type of, we're projecting a project out there and there's unknowns. You know, typically these types of projects, you would do a design and construction phase and then come back with the second portion of that. Right now, we don't know what is even in the design. And so we're approving work that may not exist or may exist. It just seems like there should have been a breakout of some of this work in milestones, so to speak. And I agree with doing the lump sum to not to exceed, but we should also be looking at, once we get that design and construction and we go for a contract, are these consulting services actually all still needed? And if not, when we break something out, is that going to be worth a dollar or, you know, how do you determine it at that point? We just really don't have any way to reconcile this. And the reason why I ask that is, you know, we're cutting into our $85,000 that we've approved budget. And so pretty significant amount of that budget and leaves us $55,000 left. And that was really what drove my concern, is that with construction material, we just know the how volatile it is today. And so I'd be surprised if we come in at that 55 and then we have this out there where we may not need all of that funding for this. How do we reconcile it on the other end of it?
Yeah, no, definitely good comments. Couple of thoughts. One, I guess I would add that we have the 55, but we also have the additional 70,000 from the National Estuary Program. So thankfully, our construction budget at this point is 125,000 total. So it's, but even with that, I have concerns, as you referenced, cost escalation, supply chain. You know, it we have seen significant increase in construction project costs over the last couple of years. So a couple of, you know, strategies to deal with that. You know, one of the things I have been looking at the fiscal year 23 budget and seeing if there aren't other areas where if we need additional funding to fund construction that we may be able to find that within our current approved budget. And there are a couple of potentially anticipated to be unspent items. We have 20,000 budgeted for legal counsel support this year that we thankfully we haven't had to use any of that funding this year. We've got technical adaptive management, technical services with approximately 10,000 remaining in that fund. And I believe there was potentially some other funds as well. So it gives me comfort that we've got some flexibility. You know, we've worked with Cleith Harris Geologists a long time. I mean, they're going to be cost effective, you know, based on my experience. And then in reality, their proposal was much lower than any of the other design and construction oversight proposals that we received. So, you know, by recommending them, it preserves the maximum amount of budget we would have available for construction activities. And then the tricky thing is, and I agree with you, typically, unless your intention is to do a kind of design build approach, you would fund the design, then you'd have your estimate of construction, and then you would go out to bid, and then you would, you know, separately procure your construction oversight, potentially, you know, you could separate it. One of the challenging things with wells is the design and the construction are really, and a lot of times, kind of one in the same. So they'll put together an initial design based on their best estimates of the geology that they're going to see based on, you know, the Rosina well and other nearby lithological logs that we have. But the actual final design for the well doesn't happen until you're in the middle of construction and they drill that first test hole and they log the aquifer materials. That's when, you know, and they get those results back from the lab. That's when the geologist really does that final design, which ultimately impacts the ultimate construction or determines the ultimate construction cost, is how much and where to screen the monitoring well to really capture the portion of the aquifer mm-hmm. that we're targeting. And so just from that perspective, it does make it a little bit challenging with this specific type of project or any real well project to kind of separate those. So there's some thoughts I had, but
yeah, and I guess it was just a back for, you know, it goes both ways, like we're talking about, you know, it could be, you got to keep moving. Once you're in, you know, you just keep moving through that process. And, but there's just so many unknowns along that way that been down that road, not with actual monitoring wells, but production wells. And that's just a big variable there too. So I don't want to hold this up, but just, you know, I think I made this kind of comment on other estimates, and I fully agree with Cleith, his experience here, looking at his estimates compared to many of the other geologists, we definitely get the best value through him. I'm not questioning that part of it. I just like to keep it a little tidier in the future. And so I think at this point we have a motion and a second on the floor, and we're going to add in the not to exceed language in that. And
I think that's key with the you know, I was going to try to separate design from construction until Mr. Heimel explained there, you know, separate design from the construction management. Mm-hmm. But indeed they're integral. I think this is a really good discussion to identify the risks. We've got not to exceed. We'll ask for early communication and attention to this project to keep us to our limited budget and just work it out.
Yeah, and I would add, I mean, this is not the final decision approval for the BMC. I mean, we're going to go out to bid for the construction of the project, and we'll be bringing that back to the BMC for their approval. So this is really just to allow the hydrogeologist to initiate the design to the best of their ability with the information that they have, to put together the bid documents to help us complete the permit applications to the point that we can get to a public bid, you know, for the well. And then we'll come back with the remaining, you know, hydrogeologic services budget, as well as the anticipated construction budget.
Well, so he, for instance, he has to estimate the depth and the thickness of both zones that we're supposed to penetrate. We don't have a well particularly close to that. And so it is an iterative by nature, an iterative process. Our bids are probably going to come back that it's going to cost X to drill to these specifications with Y dollars per foot more if we have to go deeper, right? You know, so it's an unknown world down there. I guess that's the story that I take from it.
But, you know, I would be interested in, you know, are there ways that we can, you know, better find, you know, I guess, differentiate or delineate these aspects of work just to help address these concerns in the future? And so I can definitely work with staff to find, you know, if there's other ways we can structure some of these solicitations and or the kind of the fee estimates that we're requesting.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so do we need a roll call or just a unanimous vote on that?
Yeah, motion? Sorry, did we get a motion in a second?
Sure.
Okay. And then let's just do a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 3-0.
Okay. Moving down, action item 9E, Program C, Adaptive Management Modifications and Reinclusion of the Third Well.
Yes, thank you, Chair Zimmer. So our last action item for the day is 9E. If the board will recall, and I'm blanking on the specific date, I want to say February or March, we presented a technical memorandum from Cleith Harris Geologist that TM is included in the agenda packet for reference, that looked at updating the estimates of the increase in sustainable yield that the Program C wells will provide based on the new methodology for calculating the sustainable yield of the basin. So the basin plan had estimates of the increase in sustainable yield that these additional Program C wells would provide, but that was based on the old methodology for calculating sustainable yield. So when in 2021, the BMC approved the new methodology for calculating the sustainable yield, it was prudent to then revisit the estimates in sustainable yield that we would predict that those wells would provide now. And also potentially prudent to revisit the historical decision in 2018 to defer the third well from Program C. And that was done based on those previous estimates and the previous sustainability yield estimate that basically indicated that or predicted that the BMC could reach the basin yield metric target of 80 with only two Program C wells. And so now we have a new methodology for calculating sustainable yield. We have new estimates for how much additional sustainable yield the Program C wells would provide. And based on that and the results of that, it's recommended that the BMC consider re-including, and I don't know if re-inclusion is actually a word, but that's what I'm using, that third well back into Program C.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got some just overview slides on Program C. Again, these were provided in the previous presentation of the TM, but we'll just run through it quickly. You know, Program C is a program to shift groundwater production from the lower aquifer in the western area, shown in green, to the central area. And it increases the sustainable yield because you can pump more water from those portions of the basin, as our model tells us, without inducing seawater intrusion compared to pumping on the western portion of the basin. I pulled this from the basin plan itself. This green area is actually where Program C wells were envisioned to be located in the basin plan back in 2015. But if you look at where the first two wells were actually located, they're actually a little bit outside of that. They're to the west of that. And I think that largely had to do was just the ability to site those first two Program C wells, and where could the purveyors, or you know, Golden State and the CSD, find suitable locations for those wells. And so we have the first Program C well completed by Golden State over on Los Olivos Avenue, shown there in the center of the map. The CSD has constructed, drilled the second Program C well over there on Bay Oaks Drive, kind of on the extension of South Bay Boulevard. And then for the purposes of this analysis and this TM, the third Program C well was assumed to be at Site C, one of the locations that was evaluated by the CSD in its site selection for the second Program C well. I would like to state that there has been no determination over the site of the third Program C well. I think as we talked about our last meeting, the Golden State Water Company is looking at potentially an additional well, yet to be determined if that would even be a Program C well, depending on where it's sited. And even if it is, where would it be sited is still to be determined and permitted and approved. So again, this is conceptual location, but we've provided it for the purposes of being able to estimate how much additional sustainable yield a third program seawell would provide. So we've covered this. This is really just, you know, what is the basin yield metric? And it's the estimate of current production shown in blue on that graph compared to the estimated sustainable yield shown in light green. And then the basin yield metric really says that our target is to be 80% of the total of the estimated sustainable yield, or that dark green bar. So just for reiteration, you know, we're currently pumping well below the sustainable yield estimate, but still above our target of 80% of the sustainable yield estimate, meaning that our basin yield metric is 84 and our target's 80. So still work to do to get down to that target. And that work could include a number of things. One is increased implementation of basin plan programs. So adding a second and third program seawell is estimated to increase the sustainable yield of the basin. And so that would lower our basin yield metric and help us get towards our target. And so the TM looked at the estimated increase in sustainable yield that the wells would provide. That's the column on the far right. And I want to characterize that, you know, and there's an asterisk here and a footnote at the bottom, that those sustainable yield estimates were done with the assumption that we have a fully developed Broaddrson mound. And, you know, as this board knows, our current estimate for the development of the Broaddrson mound is only 50%. And so, but as you can see, well one is estimated with a fully developed Broaddrson mound to increase the sustainable yield of the basin to 2,510. So our current sustainable yield estimate is 2,380. And so if you do the math there, really the difference that the Broaddrson mound provides is approximately 130 acre feet per year of sustainable yield. 2,510 minus 2,380. So just important number, I think, for everybody to have. You know, increasing the Broaddrson mound is a key part of the strategy for mitigating against seawater intrusion in the Los Osos Basin. And going from 50% to 100% is anticipated to increase the sustainable yield of the basin by 130 acre feet.
Well one is online.
Right? Well one is online currently.
And so the delta to get to 2510 is full development of the Broaddrson mound.
Yep. Yes. And the 130 acre feet per year. Well two, once constructed, is anticipated to increase the sustainable yield in an additional 30 acre feet per year. And then well three, if constructed at the site C location, is anticipated to increase the sustainable yield estimate an additional 70 acre feet per year. Yes, sorry, just checking my math. Beyond that. And these are the updated estimates based on the new sustainable yield estimate methodology. And so I've tried to take all of that information and show it a different way here with these graphs, but it's similar to the figure on the previous slide. The light green line represents the sustainable yield estimate for the basin under these various scenarios. The dark green line represents the target production of 80% of the sustainable yield estimate, or what production would be at if we were at a basin yield metric of 80. And then the blue columns represent our current estimate of production in the basin, which is it was 2,000 acre feet per, or 2,000 acre feet in 2021, 2,010 acre feet in 2022, but roughly 2,000 acre feet per year is our production. So if we look at the first column, you can see, you know, right now we only have well one online. And Broaddrson's only at 50% development. And, you know, we're, our production is over our target. And that's why our basin yield metric is 84. Now, if we shift to the next one, now we're assuming Broaddrson's at 100%. And so basically this is saying that, you know, with Broaddrson at 100% and one program C well, we'd be right at the basin yield metric you can target of 80 or, you know, but, you know, it's right there. With another well, we start to get a little breathing room. You can see the little bit of space between the target of the dark green line and the blue column. And then with the third well, now we actually get some real breathing room in which, you know, we're pumping, you know, somewhat significantly below the target of which at that point would be 2,088 acre feet per year. And would correspond to a basin yield metric of, of 0.76 or 76. So, showing all this to say that it's recommended that the BMC consider re-adding that third program C well back, third well back into program C to help the BMC reach its basin yield metric target of 80. You know, these figures here kind of point to, well, we may not need to do that. You know, just letting Broaddrson Mound build by itself could potentially get us to a basin yield metric of 80, you know, that third column. But, you know, I think we also saw this year is that the water levels at the Broaddrson Mound have been historically consistently rising. And this year we started to see signs of almost a little bit of a stabilization, that it kind of stopped rising and kind of stabilized based on the transducer data we have. And it's really early. We don't exactly know what that means, but it could be a sign, you know, that the Broaddrson Mound may not reach its full height as originally estimated in the basin plan. And, you know, we'll just have to do more, monitoring, and then the transient model will be also an additional tool to help us look at that. But it does point to, you know, another level of uncertainty. So having an additional buffer, having that third well in program C, increasing the sustainable yield, I think could help us definitely, you know, provide more assurance that we'll get to that basin yield metric target of 80.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions for Dan? We'll go ahead and open it up to public comment on item 9D. Item 9E.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're online, please raise your hand. And if you're in the boardroom, please come up to the podium. There's no public comment online.
Becky McFarland, the Broaddrson Mound is near and dear to my heart because it's right behind my house. And it's an interesting thing. It is disappointing that it may be stalled and it may end up staying there, although with the information that it might be pushing nitrates over into S&T water, maybe that's a good thing. But as Dan was saying, it adds another level of uncertainty to the basin, and that's why I bring up building in Los Osos and how it pertains to our basin and what the county is doing. I mean, we saw in a newspaper article a few years ago that with, you know, the two documents approved by the Coastal Commission, we should be able to start building in a year and a half. So people have expectations that they're going to be able to build. But I think it's very important that they know, yes, things are improving, and yes, that's wonderful. And I'm really happy about that because I'm paying for the sewer and I want it to work. I conserve and I want to see that working. It is, but this whole thing started with sustainability for the existing population. I know both Ron and Chuck have mentioned this too. We're talking about existing populations. So there is great concern among some citizens at the push by the county to add more housing when things are uncertain. I'm not against more housing. My parents were able to build their dream house here. People have been waiting decades, and yet other things are being built before they're getting a chance. And I don't think we should take a chance with our sole source of water until we've figured it out. And again, I appreciate what you guys do here. It is very complicated. And to back to the maps of seawater intrusion, our regional water board, public
just want to apologize for the technical difficulties. We are working on getting it fixed. Very sorry. One moment, please. Ron, if you are able to hear me, the main computer that has the camera has turned off or disconnected and needs to be reconnected. We have to pause the BMC meeting until we get it repaired. Thank you. For those online, I apologize. We are in the process of getting the meeting back up and running. Thank you. Want to apologize again for the delay. We are working on it, and I will keep you posted. Thank you for your patience. We are unfortunately not able to get the presentation back up, so we are going to continue agenda item 9E to a future meeting, and we're going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting at 3:06 p.m. Again, I apologize for the inconvenience.